1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551 is our text number. It began for us anyway with a phone call last Monday week from Alan Kennedy, who is a friend of two Polish men who had been murdered in daylight in Dublin and Crumlin stroke Drimna 10 years ago, savagely murdered by one man using a screwdriver. Again, apologies, but that was the nature of the man. Got a double life sentence, but Alan, thanks to the offices of the Sunday World, discovered that the killer had been allowed out of prison to spend a day, if not longer, we don't know if it was previous episodes, a day with his family. And the Alan, and indeed we were contacted by the Polish family, Pavel's, Mariusz's family indeed, in Poland, who were deeply upset. And one of the reasons they were deeply upset is that that they had not been informed. They were deeply upset with the man being released, and she told of the heartbreak for her family. Then we had a number of other calls over the following week, including yesterday with Philip and the day before. And this morning, Bridget McLaughlin gave a most powerful interview. I heard both of them. I heard her on with Pat and indeed on with Sean, and she was stunningly powerful about the application by her sister's husband, who murdered, now they were separated at the time but living in the same house, but who murdered Siobhan McLaughlin, and his name is Brian Kearney, and the family are deeply upset that he's getting a day out as well very soon. And and she explained, as others have over the last week or so, the reasons why the families are upset about this. Now John contacted us. John, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks. Can you tell us your situation, John?
Yeah. Back in 2005, our sister was murdered by her ex-husband in the UK.
Okay.
In London, and in a gruesome fashion as well. And my sister left behind two little girls, whom we brought back to Ireland, and my remaining sister has looked after them in a fantastic manner. Over the last 15 years or so. But anyway, the point I wanted to make, Joe, is that in the UK, the system is much better than here, because we are constantly kept in the loop as to what's happening.
Okay.
Now, we have been informed that that he obviously is due to come up for parole, but we're allowed to give our feelings and make a victim impact statement about whether how we feel about the whole situation. But and the law changed last year, apparently, because before the parole board didn't have to give any reasons why they would give parole to the perpetrator of a crime, but now they have to give you a reason why they think that the perpetrator has to let out on parole or whatever. But the point I wanted to make is that, in our case, there was no apology, there was no attempt to apologize to the family or to us or to his children for what he did.
Okay.
There was no remorse whatsoever, and now we're living with the worry that if he does come out, what's to stop him coming after us as a family? And I think that's the same thing for many people, for many families. Like, if these people aren't properly monitored, and they pay their debt somewhat to society by being incarcerated, but they do not pay a debt to the family that they've ripped apart, and that's what really gets that's I think most people, that the family is left. And I was horrified. I heard the interview with that lady on Shona Rook this morning, and I was horrified that that they're kept out of the loop and you're not told anything. And I think that's
In fairness to Bridget, she did point out that when he applied for parole, which he hasn't been granted at this stage, the family were allowed to make a written submission. In your case in the UK, and it, things changed dramatically in the UK because of a case which came into the public eye about 18 months ago. John Warboys, he's a black cab taxi driver, drugged women and then sexually assaulted them. And he was being released, they discovered, and there was uproar. And I think the head of the parole board had to resign because they hadn't taken into account, or the feeling was, this man had attacked at least 14 women, aged between 18 and 34. But anyway, that changed the law in the UK. It changed a lot of, changed personnel as well, because that was deemed to be handled very, very, very badly. But in terms of your communication with the UK authorities, do they say, come over and see us, or write to us? How does the family communicate?
Well, it's primarily my sister that does the communication with them, and she travels over. Like, she travelled over with my brother last year to a meeting with the parole board, and we made a collective impact statement. From everybody, from sisters and brothers and nieces and nephews and stuff like that, and our own children, obviously. But
now, in your case, John, can I just, because you mentioned children as well, they had your sister and this man who murdered her, did they have children together?
They had two children, they had two little girls.
And what age would they be now?
They're 24 and 19. So my remaining sister has reared them, and she's done a fantastic job.
Okay. And what age were they when their father murdered their mother?
I think it's about 6 and 2 or something like that. I can't remember.
Because there was also a child in Siobhan McLaughlin's household when the husband, Brian Kearney, killed her and then tried to fake it as a suicide.
But like, my point, Joe, is that, we've kind of weathered the storms, and the ripples from this have been horrific, really, and I suppose the point I'm trying to make is that why should people be, why should they have inflicted upon them now the worry of whether somebody else is going to be killed in the family, or whether they're going to be taunted in the street by the killer, or in our case it's a little bit different because he's technically over in the UK, but there's nothing to stop him from coming on a ferry or something like that and coming over. I mean, he probably wouldn't be able to get on a flight, but these people are very cunning, and they're psychopaths. I'm not saying every single one of them is, but the lady that spoke this morning, again, there was no mention of any remorse or anything like that for what they did, so.
And the other point, and you're making it as well, in this specific case of murder, the killer will know the relations of his victim, obviously.
Oh,
That doesn't happen. So he knows generally where you are, where you're from. So that possibility does arise, doesn't it? But is that possibility worrying you?
Absolutely, and it's simple to find somebody. If somebody's on Facebook, you just Google them and you get a whole lot of information, or you can find anything about anybody in a matter of minutes, with computers. So it's this worry now that we have to go through in the future. Is this person going to attack again? And you shouldn't have to deal with that in your life. Having gone through the initial loss of a loved one.
And as you say, no remorse, because he would have known where to write, wouldn't he? He knew the family. Remorse, no contrition, to the family at least. And what can I ask, John? I know you don't want to give her name, but just in terms of, given that your sister is deceased, and to give her the respect, which I know the family give her every waking moment. And what age was she when she was killed?
She was just 41.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so...
Very young.
She was a young woman. She was a beautiful person in every respect.
And how, because Bridget spoke about this morning as well, about Siobhan, who discovered the murder?
Well, what happened was when she divorced him, he he obviously had to move out and the apartment was sold. So my remaining sister moved in with her to help her with, you know, looking after the children. But there was a litany of events leading up to her death. You know, he used to, he tried to set fire to the apartment, and he set, he torched their car. They bought a car together and he set fire to that. And then, you know, he was doing a whole lot of things, but he was just too clever. The police couldn't pin anything on him. But the final straw was he just waited for the children to go to school one morning, and my sister was gone to work. Mm-hmm. And my elder sister was gone to work. They worked in the same office in London, and when she had a kind of a flexi operation thing, so she could bring the kids to school and then go home and go into work. But she never arrived at work. My sister knew there was something wrong, and she went out with the police, and they found her dead in the apartment. She'd been stabbed to death and strangled. So.
Oh God! Well, condolences on that. Your parents, obviously, they were alive then. I presume they were alive. Was young.
Yeah, well, my mother's still alive. She's still hale and hearty, and is living. You know, and she lost two children that year because my brother died as a result as well. You know.
Okay. Okay.
So, anyway. Yeah. But I just feel that there's too much attention given to the perpetrators of these crimes and not enough attention given to the families and the victims, you know. And it's always been the case. I actually spoke to you about 5 years after my sister died, Joe. You were on about something similar, and I spoke to you about this. But again, it's the same thing. The victims get all the attention, and or sorry, the perpetrators get all the attention, and the victims are just forgotten about, and you just become subsumed into this sort of legal system that, you know, or like that tells, dictates to you, you know, that you need to get on with your life and forget about these people. But you can't forget about them. They're out there, and they're constantly in the back of your mind, you know, and you're constantly worried about whether they're going to strike again. So, you know, again, you know, that, again, something that I heard on Sean O'Rourke, there was a writer on who used to work with, he was a psychiatrist who worked with killers, and he said that most of them still do kill a second time, even though they're released. And, you know, and they can fool the system. You know, it's easy to fool the system.
Okay.
To get out.
John, again, condolences on the tragic death of your sister and kind regards to your family, especially your two nieces. That's John, who contacted us on foot of the interview this morning with Bridget, that Sean and indeed Pat did, and also the ongoing stories we're hearing for the past 2 weeks on Liveline. 1857-158-15. 51551 is the text number. Back to this whole issue, as I say, which has been on the programme for 2 weeks now, about families of murder victims and how they're treated afterwards in terms of contact from the state and consultation, especially after the perpetrators are sent to prison. Now, in this case, I'm told it's manslaughter. Michelle O'Brien, but the Michelle, it's your brother, is it?
No, it's my nephew, Joe.
It's your nephew, sorry. Your nephew, and he is, I know I said manslaughter, but your nephew is Damien O'Brien, as he's 28, and he was killed.
That's correct.
That's correct. What happened to Michelle?
Well, he had been gigging because that was Damien's job, and he was out gigging that evening. Mm-hmm. And after he finished, he met up with a few of the boys. They went to one of their local pubs, and he went to pick up his girlfriend. On his way down to get the taxi, one of the boys knew Damien's girlfriend and just called her over for a chat.
Yeah.
So when the taxi came, Damien went to call Catherine to say, come on, let's go. And as they walked away, this other guy said something nasty towards Catherine. Damien just turned back and said, you know, don't speak to my girlfriend like that. And went to walk away. What we discovered was that he was midstream conversation when this man, two fists, one on each side of the head, and before Damien hit the ground, I'd say he was unconscious and all at that stage. He was rushed then to Cork University Hospital, where he ended up on life support for a week with operations in between to relieve the pressure on the brain. And a week later, the doctors came to us and told us that, you know, he wasn't going to recover. Our court case then was last Friday. And in the court case, they showed two videos. One was of another crime that this person had done. And there was a suspended sentence given previously for that crime. So when he attacked Damien, well, then the crime then was back in the court on the same day as Damien's. And he was given 3.5 years for that case, which then he was suspended for a year, and then he was suspended for a further 2.5 years. So we as a family thought that he was, that the book was going to be thrown at him now, because of Damien. And when it came to Damien's case, then he was given 7.5 years with another further 2.5 years suspension.
Okay.
And with to serve 5 years and €100 fine.
So this man who had other charges, but this man who killed your nephew was a two-punch attack. And if people have not heard of the catastrophic effect those punches can have this through this program or whatever else over the last number of years, people know that to engage in this is a very, very, very dangerous thing to do and could kill somebody and has killed somebody.
Absolutely.
In your case, your nephew.
Yes.
And this man will do what? Five? Well, unless he'll get... his sentence now is 5 years.
Yes.
We presume he'll get remission of at least a year, if not longer. So he'd be out in just over 4 years. What's
correct.
The reaction of you and the extended family?
Well, Joe, to be honest, when he suspended the sentence, we as a family stood up and we left the court. And, the Gardaí, I think, were equally shocked, that it was such a lenient sentence for such a horrific crime. We're devastated. I have his older brother, who would be my godson, and, what he is going through himself, just trying to come to terms with what has happened, and his other sisters and his mom. We just don't understand how you could kill somebody, even under manslaughter, and still, you could say, virtually walk away from it. Which is what we feel is happening.
And the court case was quite recently, wasn't it?
It's last Friday.
Yeah, okay.
Last Friday.
Quite recent, yeah.
And
he was on bail over another unprovoked attack.
That's correct. Yes. That is correct, yes.
And his name is Craig McGrath.
That's correct.
And he was around the same age as Damien, except Damien is now dead because of Craig McGrath.
Yes. Yes.
And great. And by the people will hear your family's upset at the duration of the sentence. What was €100? What's that about?
We don't know.
Where did that figure come from?
One of my brothers remains in court. As we left, the judge seemingly said, that's not all. There's going to be a fine.
Yeah.
And then €100 is what he's stated. And, my brother at that stage stood up and said, is that all a life is worth? €100. So, from us as a family, we feel that, something has to change so that, young people who go out for a night out, with their friends should be able to do that in comfort and not have to worry about what might happen to them if they come across the wrong person.
Yeah, and the people who do this are tempted to do it, or it's in their armory, so to speak, to punch people in the head, especially this one punch where no one is expecting it and can't recoil or should know that this is a grievous, grievous crime and should be treated as such.
Correct, yes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Just briefly, because I already see people on Twitter talking about Damien.
Yes.
Damien O'Brien,
he was an amazing musician and so talented. Joe, he played a keyboard by ear from the age of 3.
Wow.
He was amazing.
What a gift. And what a loss. Yes. And what a loss. Yes.
A huge loss to society.
Yeah. Michelle, condolences to you and your extended family, and to Catherine as well, who was mentioned there,
yes,
talking about Damien O'Brien, who was killed in what's known as a one-punch attack in Waterford City. And the case, he just finished, as you heard last weekend. It happened last summer. 51551.